What time is it here? 4 o'clock. Bright and early. All right. So we better get going then. So the topic that was listed for today is Tevilas Kelim. The Torah tells us in last week's Parsha that after the Milchemes Midyan, after the war that Bnei Yisrael have with Midyan, they are victorious. They acquire many items that were previously belonged to the Midianites. And the Torah, in fact, at that point tells us the rules as to what you have to do with the various utensils. And this, for starters, we're talking about kashering things. Being that the Midianites did not keep kosher, we have every reason to believe. Therefore, we learn that these are the ways that if you get a utensil that had non-kosher meat, etc., this is how you make it kosher. Beyond that, there is another law we learn now, and that's called Tevilas Kelim. Tevilas Kelim means that if you acquire certain utensils from a non-Jew, those utensils have to go to the mikveh before you can use them. This has nothing to do with them being kosher or not. You go to Target and you buy yourself a set of pans, you have to take them to the mikveh. They're obviously kosher. No one's ever used the pans before. It's not like you're buying them from Goodwill. You're buying it from a Target. Therefore, the assumption is they have not been used before. But still, you have to take it to the mikveh. What's the reason for this? So there are two approaches to this. First approach is the approach of the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi has this concept, which is a little difficult to understand, meaning I don't totally understand it, so I'll do as good a job as possible as passing it over. And that is somehow that the pots have to become Jewish, that they have to be moved from Giulei Nachri to Kedushas Yisrael. That somehow or another, there is a process, much like a person who converts undergoes a process which involves going to the mikveh. To make them Jewish, so too your pots, for some reason, have to become Jewish as well. It's very interesting. Based on this, the Shem Mishmuel in last week's Parsha comments that in the event that somebody is converting, so think about this, a non-Jewish person, so they own pots, they own pans, and for a while, I'm sure, before they become Jewish, already keeping kosher, etc., they kosher their kitchen, now they convert. So do they now have to take all the utensils to the mikveh? Logically, the answer is yes, because yesterday it was owned by a non-Jew, and today it's owned by a Jew. That would be the short answer. The Shem Mishmuel says no, that since the whole concept is that you're supposed to convert your pots by going in the mikveh yourself, all your possessions come with you, and therefore you do not have to. The same Rishul is written by the Sacher Shaver, yes.
How is that any different than a Jew from birth buying a new pot? So everything they own, you know.
Because there was no process.
They didn't own that pot before they bought it any more than this new Jew owned the pot before they were Jewish. I mean, it wasn't relevant to them as the Jew that they are before either.
Right. So the bottom line is it's a very difficult concept to understand. As I prefaced, I can't tell you that I understand it myself. Therefore, it would be hard for me to defend it. However, I will note that usually this was for years known as a collector's item. People would read this and chuckle a little bit and move on. Until Rav Avadya Yosef, in his seventh volume of Yabi Omer, quotes this Lahalacha, and he thinks that if a person converts, it's really not necessary for them to tovel their kelim, based partially at least on the Shem Mishmuel.
This is assuming they already toveled it when they were learning, or
no? Again, if they would tovel when they're learning, it would be worthless.
No, I understand that, but I'm wondering if they're saying that it was working kind of lemafreya, that, but it's not
right. No, the idea is that the ger is going into the mikveh.
Okay.
Spiritually, it's as if he took all of his utensils with him, or her. It's a very interesting concept. The question, usually I always put it together with another interesting Geirus question that comes with it, and that is the issue of Bishul Akum. If a non-Jew cooks something, even though we know that the food is absolutely kosher, it's not milk and meat, we wash them still, unless there was a Jew involved with it in some minor way, you're not allowed to eat it because it was cooked by a non-Jew. Why shouldn't you be allowed to eat it? So the concern, the rabbi says, is intermarriage. You know, you have Italian next to neighbors, and then she makes the pasta, and she makes the pasta sauce. And this is the best pasta sauce in the world. And your mom is chalashing for it. You think, If I would marry her daughter, I'd have this pasta sauce every day for the rest of my life. It'd be main om haba. It'd be the best thing ever. So because of that concern, right? If there's no, if it's purely non-Jewish made, we're not allowed to eat it. So the question is, let's say a person gets up in the morning, a non-Jew, makes himself some scrambled eggs, and then he's eats half of it, put the other half in the fridge. Now he goes and converts. He wants to eat the leftovers. Is he allowed to eat it? So what would the gezeira be? We are concerned that he might marry himself yesterday. Right? Again, unless he, even if he would have a DeLorean and the requisite amount of gigawatts, he still would be difficult to pull that off. So that's an interesting discussion as well. So you have this idea out there, therefore what it's according to the Rishalmi, that somehow this idea of Tvilas Kalim is a conversion of your pots and pans. The Rush has a little bit different approach. He says, Gezeir Sakasif, no reason. No reason for it. This is just what it says in the, like so many other things. Why is it that we can't eat milk and meat together? Why is it that we put on tefillin? What's the reason for all these mitzvahs? So the short answer is, because God said so. So this falls under that category as well. Yes?
You start saying chasmus doesn't apply in cases where it doesn't apply right now. That's the case. You can say, well, I'm already married.
Oh, so... No,
I'm a
so
guy, again, a guy, and I'm a guy. I'm not
right. A guy. So again, so there are people who say low plug. You don't make exceptions for these things. On the other hand, there is a concept out there which some people are into, which is called super palter, meaning that without getting too involved, let's say something was made in a factory by a non-Jew. Let's say I eat that, whatever it is, Entenmann's Donuts. And I eat this Entenmann's Donut and I think, oh, this is the best Entenmann's Donut I've ever had in my life. I want to find out who made this donut and I like to run off and marry them. What are the odds you're going to be able to find the person who made this donut? Right? Even if you find which factory it came from and which run it was on and which run, you know, it just doesn't work out. There are people who are more baker in that case. What?
Plus there are no people anymore. It's all machines anyway.
Right, so there's got to be someone who starts it. So that's the story with that. If you look at the Chumash itself, the Chumash says that any one of six medals have to be Tovel. And there's a list. These are the six original teams from the periodic table. And they are gold, silver, copper, iron, tin, and lead. As far as they knew in the ancient world, these were the six metals that existed. There is a major discussion as to when the Torah says these six metals, does it mean only these six metals, or are these just six examples of metals? For example, let's say I would have some cookware made out of aluminum. Aluminum is totally different than these other six. It has a different chemical makeup, right? As silver is different from gold, right? Aluminum is different from the two of them. So what's the story with that? So that is a machlokes among the Achronim. Right? The machlokes is around 100 years old, pretty much at the time when they figured out that there are more metals out there that you can do stuff with. And some people say that it's a din d'oraisa, that these are only an example, but the more popular opinion, which is brought down by Rav Moshe Feinstein, is that no, that really, according to the Torah, it's only those six metals, it's nothing else. So what about aluminum? Do I have to total aluminum at all? So the Gemara tells us that besides metals, there's another category of utensils that have to be toveled, they have to be immersed in the mikvah, and that category is glass. Because glass is similar to metal. How is glass similar to metal? They share a certain property, and that property is?
They're solid.
Well, most utensils are solid. I don't have many liquid pots or pans, or gaseous for that matter. They're similar in terms of if they break, they can be melted back together, right? Unlike pottery, unlike wood, unlike other materials, when it comes to the six metals in question and glass, they can both be melted and put together. So even according to the people who say that on the Torah level it was only those six and nothing else, still aluminum does share the same ability to be melted and put together as the other metals and glass. So therefore, even if you're not going to say that the Torah requires us to do this. Despite that, obviously, you're at least going to have to do it midrabanan, and you make a bracha on it all the same.
This is only to do with something that you own? What happens when you're in a hotel and they have the little glasses?
So that's not a problem. You don't own that.
So I'm saying this only applies to things that you own.
Correct. If it's only if there has been a transfer of ownership from a non-Jew to a Jew.
And you could use it if it's the non-Jews.
Absolutely. Not only that, I'll go a step further. The Shulchan Aruch itself talks about the following case. Let's say it's Shabbos, and my wife has cooked, and I went to the Beis Medrash, and surprise, I've got a whole slew of more guys than she was expecting. So we don't have enough glasses. However, as fate would have it, we just bought some glasses at the Target recently, and therefore she says, but she hasn't taken it to the mikveh yet. But we need to use them. What are we going to do?
Can you use plastic?
Come on. Oh. We don't have plastic, let's say. So what are we going to do? This is the only things I have. We have for Shabbos. So are you allowed to tovel kelim on Shabbos? So we assume not. That's saying something that's not usable, making it usable, that's problematic. So the Shulchan Aruch says, I've got an idea. Knock on your door and say, Mr. Rodriguez, I hereby give you as a gift half ownership in all of these glasses. And he says, see, whatever he says, right? And with that, it is no longer totally Jewish owned. Now it is non-Jewish owned, and therefore I can use it without a problem. Afterwards, you know, I'll come to him after Shabbos and I say, you mind if I have that half back? And he says, see, hopefully, if it works out well. And then you tell him it afterwards. In fact, during the week, technically, this could work as well. If someone gets stuck, you have the ability to transfer ownership to a non-Jew, and in fact, strangely enough, that makes things better. So it's only if there was a shiloh this year about Chop Chop, I think it was. Chop Chop is a Chinese kosher Chinese place in the Washington Heights area. And in most of these setups, there is a co-ownership between a Jew and a Chinese guy. You know, the Chinese guy knows how to cook, and the Jew knows how to run business. You know, all the stereotypes tend to be true, and you know, that's how these things tend to work. It happens to be in Chop Chop at some point. It might not have been Chop Chop. It might be a different Chinese place. The Jewish owner bought out the non-Jew, so. Someone came up, pointed out, well, now you've got to take all of the kelim, have to go to the mikveh. So I remember I was with a certain rabbi, and they asked him, so they're not going to get it all, they can't get it all by tonight, you know, what should they do first? So he suggested that maybe you should just do the utensils that are going to be used by the people more often, do the glasses, etc. So as the person walked away, I said, well, why didn't you say, do the metal. The metal is d'oraisa. Glass is only d'rabanan. But she said, well, why did you say that 2 minutes ago? Yeah, that made sense. Oh,
why is that even worse? Why is that worse than, let's say, a Jew's house and they haven't, I know there's some gulos, but can't you just say, okay.
So a Jew is, if you go to a Jew's house, right, so cooking something in a pot or the like that is not toveled,
right,
does not make it not kosher.
Right.
However, there might be a misayeya supporting this type of thing problem that you would have by a Jew. So therefore, Rabbi Shachter had this idea one time that he mentioned that plates can be ovaling also. Well, so if we need you for a minion, we'll call you afterwards. So the question, he says that it could be that there's less of a problem than using a plate than like a soup bowl, because plates, right, you don't really need them. Right, you can eat on the thing, but a soup bowl, you can't really eat on the table. So it's actually more of a useful thing. So those are, that's the story. So you have to do glass, you have to do metals.
You said before you do make a bracha on glass?
Yes, absolutely. Now, there are other materials that are not. So, obviously, something like wood you wouldn't make it on. You wouldn't make it on pottery. What about plastic?
You wouldn't have to total it. It's even
Right, right. I mean, what about plastic? You have to tell them plastic? So there is a tshuva someplace which says, well, there are two different types of plastic. One type of plastic is the type of plastic we tend to have in our house, which is when you keep it too close to the oven, it kind of evaporates. You ever have that? You put something too hot in the microwave, you know, can get a hole in it. Supposedly there's another type of plastic, which I'm not familiar with, where if you just heat it up, you can reshape it.
Well, what about microwave-proof?
Right.
Like real
stuff? Right. So I guess that stuff, I don't know, can you melt it? Can you? I have no idea. So Rav Avadya thinks in that case where you could melt it and put it back together, in those situations, in that type of plastic, you should... But you should do it. I don't think anyone does it. I personally do not do it. I'll tell you that. How about the issue of China? So what's China? China is made is basically pottery. However, it has a very thin layer of glass on it. So there are people out there who say that since the outer layer is glass, that's what you're eating after, so it's really considered glass, and therefore you do have to tovel it. If you go to the Rapp household, you'll find that the Rapp china still has the stickers on the bottom, which indicates that we never took it to the mikveh. That's the giveaway. We don't think so. We don't think that any type of pottery, even if it has a very microscopic layer of glass, we don't think it makes a difference. Supposedly, in the old days, that there was a thicker layer they had to put on, and that was what to talk about. But at this point, china does not have to go to the mikveh. A few interesting things that we talk about. So, for example, a can of Coke. Do you have to tovel your can of Coke?
Disposable.
What? So you say disposable. So Moshe Feinstein has this idea where he says that something that is only used once, something that is disposable, is not considered a kli. It's not considered a utensil. And therefore, if it's only going to be used one time, like an aluminum pan or something, you don't have to tovel it. People get confused. People think, aha, so there is a rule that the first time you can use it one time before you tovel it. There's no such rule. That's not true. The rule is that if you're only going to use it one time, then according to Rav Moshe, you don't have to tovel it. However, if you're going to use it repeatedly, right, so you can't even use it once then. According to Rav Moshe, as a by the way, this idea that something that's used one time is not a kli, that's why Rav Moshe held that you cannot make kiddush on a plastic cup. You had a kiddush there, plastic cups. Rav Moshe thought that was problematic because just like it's not a kli here, it's not a kli there. Right? It's not considered a cup because it's going to be thrown out. Rabbi Schefter disagrees, by the way. Rabbi Schefter thinks that that this idea, if you're only going to use it once, it's not a kli. He thinks that since it's strong enough that it could be used repeatedly, then that would be... So, for example, if Rabbi Schefter would drink a bottle of Snapple, he would pour out the bottle into a cup and specifically drink it for the cup because you're not allowed to use the bottle because it hasn't been toveled. However, even Rav Shatha, I believe, would drink a can of Coke from the can, not that I've ever seen him do it, because that's different. Because a can of Coke is not a kli until you open it, right? The definition of a utensil is something you can take in and out. A sealed Coke can, you can't do that to.
And a Snapple can is not considered...
Well, again, it's two... Right, again, the Snapple thing, you have a glass bottle with a metal cap. Those are two different things. The bottle is a bottle. It just has a cap on it. So you, as opposed to the case of a can, you just have markings there, and when you pop the top, you've actually made the clean.
This thing of one time is an intentional thing, or it's what type is it? Like, for example, a Snapple bottle... That could last a while.
Right, but the idea is intention.
The cup is not going to last.
Correct. So, yeah, but let's say you decide to reuse your Snapple bottle, and then you would have to tovel it, even according to Rav Moshe. Right? Mm-hmm. There used to be a big... So, they used to make Snapple art out of Snapple bottles. That used to be... It's probably on the internet someplace. Mm. So therefore, that would be... So that is the heter of Rav Moshe. Rav Shechter doesn't hold of it. It's interesting. I think one time I asked Rebbe and Shechter, so you really tovel your aluminum pans? To which he said, no. He said, but your husband holds. He said, yeah, but I cook. I'm not toveling it. So, all right. Have it your way.
So people would bring it to the mikveh, and like, would they go in with
No, it's like a regular trip to the kelim mikveh. There's something called a kelim mikveh.
No kidding.
Yep. So there's the mikveh that women go into, and men maybe sometimes, but there's a second mikveh which is just for utensils, which is open all the time, and I'm sure it's on Leiden here. Okay. Right, so that's the idea. And it's set up specifically for this. So, you know, it's a little bit different, the setup, but, you know, simple enough.
How long do you have to dip it in there for?
Momentarily.
Yeah.
And you make a bracha on it. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. You go into most kale. I haven't been to the kale mikveh here. But there's a sign that usually says if you're going to do one utensil, you say al tviras keli. If you're going to do more than one, you do al tviras kelim. I think a lot of people disagree. They think that, no, the bracha is al tviras kelim. It's in the plural. Whether you're doing one or many, you just do it all. Another issue that comes up, for example, would be utensils, like a George Foreman grill or a toaster. So that's metal.
Well, but a grill is a utensil?
George Foreman?
The oven racks as well.
Well, why not?
Gotcha.
Why isn't it a utensil? Right? Food goes directly on it. So the question, so a lot of people say, wait a second, if I would take my George Foreman grill, come on in. Hashem tzuch nisht. That's a chayin. So a lot of people say, well, if I take my George Foreman grill and I would dip it in the mikvah, it would break. So it's funny, I was talking about this in shir one time, and the guys in shir said, Rabbi, you know, you say what you want, but the way we wash our grill in the dorm when we're done is we fill it up with water, we throw the thing in, and we let it sit there for an hour or so, then everything comes off. He said, and then, you know, it dries out, and we use it the next day. If you would plug it in a minute later, that then it would break. If you give it time to dry out, it doesn't break. So that's the end of the discussion. If it's not going to break when you do that, that's fine. Just put it in. And in fact, I've toveled George Foreman grills, you know, water urns, toasters.
Toaster, would you have to do the whole thing or just the rack?
Well, again, just the rack. But again, so it depends. For example, if you have a George Foreman grill with removable
plates,
you just do the plates. However, if you got the one where it's all solids, you got to throw the whole thing in. You can hold on to the wire. That's where they have that wire. So you can dunk it with it. And I think the word is you let it sit for 24 hours. It's fine. If you need it earlier, you use a hair blower. You do a hair blower on the bottom, and it dries it out quicker. Just in terms of it's not halachic. It's more of a practical approach. An interesting question that comes up is people who use commercial size. Pots, etc., that are bigger than the mikveh. What do you do about that?
Can't take the water from the mikveh into the pot.
But you can leave it out in the rain for a few months. Right? So you could probably schlep it down to the ocean and drop it in there. But that's probably not too practical. So what's usually suggested is make a hole in the side and fix it by a Jew. Because by making a hole in it, it's not a kli anymore. And then when you fix it, it's the Jew that made the kli. So I think in Israel, etc. In Israel, it's not really a problem, because in Israel, everybody who makes it is Jewish. So if you buy things from Israel, by and large, you don't have to even tovel it, because the assumption is that it was a Jew who did it. So that would be okay. In general, the rule is that anything that you eat with, you drink with, anything that you prepare food with, has to be toveled if it's metal or glass or the like. There is a discussion about certain things which are kind of on the border. A candy dish. Okay, I put them out. So does that have to be toveled? Is that considered that it's used for the food one way or the other? So I think the minhag is that people tovel it without a bracha. Unless you only put wrapped candies in it. If you put wrapped candies in it, that seems to be as far enough removed that that's not considered a problem. By and large, the issue of Tefillas Kelim is something that people need to be reminded of. There are a lot of interesting shilas, as we pointed out there. Just to review, as we're just about to... Yeah.
So then if you have a bunch of utensils, can you sell to a Jewish guy, and that guy sells it back to you, and then everything's peachy?
No, because the Jewish guy, he had to tovel it also.
Okay.
Right? One interesting thing, with the five things, is a mistake that people sometimes make, namely rabbis, is what happens when you sell your chametz. So what are you selling? I'm selling all my Cheerios, I'm selling whatever's in the freezer, I'm selling, some people say I'm selling all of my chametz dik dishes. So people point out, you're not supposed to do that. Because if I sell my chametz dik dishes to the guy, and then he sells it back to me, now I've got to tovel everything. So what is generally done by rabbis is they don't sell the dishes. They hereby sell all the chametz that's in the dishes. But in fact, the guy never takes ownership of your dishes. Because were he to take ownership of your dishes, that would lead to the issue of requiring tevilas kelim, which, you know, is something that you probably want to avoid. All right, I think it's mincha time, and you might even get a minion.
What about a handle?
What about a handle?
A plastic spatula where the handle is metal. So food may touch it, but it's not the act.
Usually you have the opposite. Usually you have metal spatulas with plastic handles. I'm not familiar. You have one? So again, if the metal does not come in contact with the food, I don't think you have to tovel it. But usually in the opposite case, it's a metal special with a plastic handle, or pots will have, because you don't want to conduct the heat, they'll have a plastic handle. So in a case like that, what you'll want to do is you'll tovel it, but the handle doesn't have to be toveled. In fact, you can hold on to it as you do it, and it makes it a lot easier.
So what did you say about make a hole in the thing and have a Jewish person fix it?
Right.
Was it toveled by anybody?
No, because therefore, here you have a new pot that was made by a Jew.
So you can't sell a fixed one to a Jewish person and buy it back from him.
Well, again, the idea is when there's a transfer from a Jew, from a non-Jew to a Jew, you have to tovel it. Let's say it would break into 1,000 pieces. And then a nice Jewish man collects all the pieces and puts them back together like Humpty Dumpty. So that's a new pot. Right? So that was the fact that it was originally made by a non-Jew way back when doesn't make a difference. Right? What matters is who actually made it now.
So, therefore,
as opposed to if you know, we just, you know, pass the pot around, that's not going to help. The requirement to do Tevilas Kelim will remain.
We have two more people to talk.
What? Yeah, but I have to speak at Eidos now.